वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
श्रीमद्भागवतम चैप्टर 11 कैंटो 13 कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 13 टेक्स्ट 9 एंड 10। श्री भगवान उवाच अहम् इत्यन्यथा बुद्धि प्रमतस्य यथा हृदि उत्सर्पति रजो घोरम् ततो वैकारिकं मनः रजोयुक्तस्य मनसः संकल्पः स विकल्पः ततः कामो गुणध्यानान् दुस्सहस्याधिदुर्मतेः। श्री भगवान उवाच अहम् इत्यन्यता बुद्धिः प्रमतस्य यथा हृदि उत्सर्पति रजो घोरम् ततो वैकारिकं मनः रजोयुक्तस्य मनसः संकल्पः स विकल्पकः ततः कामो गुणध्यानात् कामो गुणध्यानात् दुस्सह स्याद्धिदुर्मतेः। दुर्मतेः। इत्यन्यथा बुद्धि प्रमतस्य यथा हृदि सर्पतिति विघोरम् ततो वैकारिकं मनः रजोयुक्तस्य मनसः संकल्पः स विकल्पकः ततो कामो गुणध्यानात् रजोघोरम् ततो वैकारिकं मनः रजोयुक्तस्य मनसः संकल्पः स विकल्पकः ततः कामो गुणज्ञानात् दुस्सहस्याधिदुर्मतेः।
श्री
ಆತ್ಮತಸ್ಯ ಹರಿ ಉತ್ಸರ್ಪತಿ ರಜೋ ಘೋರಂ ತತೋ ವೈಕಾರಿಕಂ ಮನಃ ರಜೋಯುಕ್ತಸ್ಯ ಮನಸಃ ಸಂಕಲ್ಪ ಸ ವಿಕಲ್ಪಕಃ ತೋ ಕಾಮೋ ಗುಣಧ್ಯಾನ ದುರ್ಮತೇ. Word for word translation. Sri Bhagavan Vacha. The Supreme Personality of God has said, Aham. False identification with the material body and mind. Iti. Does. Anyatha buddhi. Illusory knowledge. Pramatasya. Of one who is bereft of actual intelligence. Yatha. Accordingly. Hridi. Within the mind. Utsarpati. Arises. Rajaha. Passion. Ghoram. Which brings terrible suffering. Tataha. Then. Vaikarikam. Originally in the mode of goodness. Manaha. The mind. Rajaha. In passion. Yuktasya. Of that which is engaged. Manasaha. Of the mind. Sankalpaha. Material determination. Savikalpakaha. Along with variation and alternation. Tataha. From that. Kamaha. Full-fledged material desire. Guna. In the modes of nature. Dhyanat. From concentration. Dussaha. Unbearable. Syat. It must so be. He. Certainly. Durmatehe. Of a foolish person. Translation and purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. Translation. The Supreme Personality of God had said, My dear Uddhava, a person bereft of intelligence first falsely identifies himself with the material body and mind. And when such false knowledge arises within one's consciousness, material passion, the cause of great suffering pervades the mind, which by nature is situated in goodness. Then the mind, contaminated by passion, becomes absorbed in making and changing many plans for material advancement. Thus, by constantly thinking of the modes of material nature, a foolish person is afflicted with unbearable material distress. Purport. Those who are trying to enjoy material sense gratification are not actually intelligent, although they consider themselves most intelligent. Although such foolish persons themselves criticize the miseries of material life in innumerable books, songs, newspapers, television programs, civic committees, etc. They cannot desist from material life for a single moment. The process by which one is helplessly bound in illusion is clearly described here. A materialistic person is always thinking, Oh, what a beautiful house, I wish we could buy it. Or what a beautiful woman, I wish I could touch her. Or what a powerful position, I wish I could occupy it. And so on. The word sankalpaha savikalpakaha indicate that a materialist is always making new plans or modifying his old plans to increase his material enjoyment. Although in his saner moments, he admits that material life is full of suffering. The mind is created from the mode of goodness as described in Sankhya philosophy, and the natural peaceful situation of the mind is pure love for Krishna. in which there is no mental disturbance, disappointment or confusion. Artificially, the mind is dragged down to a lower platform in passion or ignorance, and thus one is never satisfied. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuronmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namaom Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. This morning, the verse from the Bhagavatam is analyzing the way the mind works and makes us work. So, the mind works primarily as a creature of habit. Whatever the mind is habituated to doing, it auto-repeats. Of course, it just doesn't auto-repeat, it expands it. So when it is said the mind is in the mode of goodness, or it originates from the mode of goodness, vaikarikam, what it means is, we know the three modes, there are three modes broadly in which material nature functions. There is creation, maintenance and destruction. Now in a sense, all these three are happening constantly. Right now when we are sitting, every moment practically hundreds of cells in the body are dying. Hundreds of new cells are being created. And there are thousands and thousands of cells which are being maintained. So, creation, maintenance, destruction is constantly happening. Creation is associated with the mode of passion. Maintenance is associated with the mode of goodness. And destruction with the mode of ignorance. The mind is primarily occupied with maintenance. Maintenance of whatever the soul is in situation. So if the soul is in material existence, the mind by its habit will maintain the soul in material existence. Now maintenance itself is not a static process. Now people who are in, say, a maintenance department in an establishment, they know maintenance is a lot of work. So to maintain things also requires considerable effort. Now, the mind, it maintains in the sense that once the mind gets a conception, it just holds on to that conception and it keeps acting according to that conception. So even if the mind, say the mind thought that this particular thing will be enjoyable and it starts doing that, it gets pleasure once, twice, thrice, but afterwards, even if the pleasure is not there, the mind just keeps doing that again and again because it believes that there is pleasure over there. So, psychologists did some experiments on some mice. They had like multiple sockets in front of them, and one of the sockets was food, other socket was electricity. So if they touch one socket, they would get food. Touch the other socket, they would get electric shock. So now, if on one particular socket, they would get food again and again, and the other socket they would get electric shock. But after some time, they change it. So that now here there was electric shock, there was food. But even if there was electric shock, again and again, they would keep doing the same thing. Still, maybe next time I'll get food, next time I'll get food, next time I'll get food. So another variant of this experiment has led to the development of what is called as the Pavlovian response. Alexander Pavlov was a Russian psychologist. He said that some dogs were fed, and when they were fed food, whenever they were fed food, the bell was rung. Like we do aarti and ring a bell. So the perverted symbol of that, they would ring a bell. And then over a period of time, the dogs started associating food with the ringing of the bell. Normally, when we see food, saliva is secreted in our tongues. Now for those dogs, as soon as they would hear the ringing of a bell, they would start secreting saliva. Although, there was no food coming over there. After some time, they would just ring the researchers would simply ring the bell and not provide any food. But still, the dogs would salivate. So here, the point is that, you know, the psychology, at a psychological level, the mind has associated the ringing of the bell with food. And because of that, as soon as the bell is heard, they think we will get food. And then the dog starts salivating. So for all of us, in our minds, say, that means there are three things. There is the ringing of the bells, there is the provision of food, and there is the secretion of saliva. So the secretion of saliva, we can compare to the pleasure that we get, or the desire or the hope that we will get pleasure. The provision of the food is the experience of pleasure. And the ringing of the bell is like the perception of the object. So alcoholics, they drink, initially they may go some high. But after some time they drink, not because they go high, but because not drinking causes torment. So there's the sense object, there is the perception of the sense object, there is the pleasure from the sense object, and there is a desire for the pleasure. The three things are there. Now, what happens after some time? The pleasure gets removed. The pleasure is no longer there, but based on the past experience, the perception of the sense object triggers the desire within us. Although, if we actually indulge in sense object, there is hardly any pleasure. Because in material life, all the pleasures follow the law of diminishing returns. Something gives a lot of pleasure initially, but afterwards the pleasure keeps going down. And somehow, unless we decouple this, now in our mind, this has been, that the sense perception means we hope it will lead to pleasure. And unless we decouple this association, there's sense perception, there is pleasure, and there is desire. So when the sense perception, the desire comes, that I'll get the pleasure now. But all that happens is the sense object is there, but the pleasure is not there. So the mind is a creature of habit, means the mind has its own momentum. So if we are driving a car and the car is moving very fast, now even if we press a brake, the car doesn't stop immediately. Like that, even if we have been at a fast speed for many lifetimes, in human as well as non-human lives, we've been perceiving sense pleasure. And so there is a momentum in the mind for the pursuit of sense pleasure. And even now, if there is no sense pleasure, the mind thinks, hey, what happened? Why didn't I get pleasure? Maybe next time I'll get. And in that way, the mind doesn't stop. The momentum slows down, but it doesn't stop at all. And this is where sankalpaha savikalpakaha. Material pleasure has always is a concomitant feature of material existence. But whether we consider Western traditions or Indian tradition in the past, there was some amount of regulation of material pleasure. And by the regulation of material pleasure, so for example, in all cultures, civilized culture, there has been always, say, marriage. The idea is, yes, we need some sensual pleasure, but there's a regulation in that. But when that regulation as is being discarded in today's world, so what happens? The mind, there is sankalpaha savikalpaka. The mind gets infinite options at the material level itself. The idea is, we cannot give up material pleasure immediately. But we experience it, after experiencing it, gradually we realize that there's not that much pleasure here. And then we start exploring the spiritual option. But in today's society, there are so many material options that are provided that we keep exploring newer and newer material options itself. So The Bhagavatam talks about how people who are attached to their families. And actually in Kali Yuga, people don't even form families. People just live together. So, there is aversion to commitment. And aversion to commitment is not detachment. Now, aversion to commitment is in tamoguna, is in the mode of ignorance. Detachment is in the mode of goodness. Detachment means that, you know, I've experienced whatever the mind is promising and there's nothing there. I want something higher. So then at detachment, one looks for something higher. When there's aversion to commitment, then the mind thinks, oh, there are so many options. All of them are enjoyable. I want to keep all doors open. So in detachment, we shut the door to material pleasure so that we can look for something higher. But in aversion to commitment, it's not that we are detached, it's rather I want to keep all the doors open. So whatever enjoyment, if I find enjoyable, I'll take that. If that doesn't work, I'll take something else. I'll take something else. So, sankalpaha sa vikalpakaha, that options which are there, when the options for material enjoyment are increased too much, then the soul never explores anything higher. Actually, when the soul is, if you don't get pleasure here, oh. In the past there was television with one TV channel. Now there are 100,000 TV channels practically. And now with internet, we can just go anywhere and everywhere. So people think, you know, somewhere or the other, I'll get pleasure somewhere. This one boy in Thailand, he's surfing on the internet, watching YouTube movies continuously for 76 hours. He forgot to eat, he forgot to drink. And finally fainted and he was hospitalized. Somehow he survived. So what happens is, the mind gets so consumed, we're talking about the mind, because of the mind's craving for pleasure, we forget the soul. But the mind's craving for pleasure can be so great that one can even forget bodily needs. Now, it's not that they have transcended the body. They have actually become so captivated by the body, by the mind, that they neglect even the body. So the mind is not just the enemy of the soul. The mind, when it is uncontrolled, can become the enemy even of the body. The mind, when uncontrolled, can become even the enemy of the body. There are many states which are like social welfare states. And there, if the people are not working, and the government pays them some. Now, many of these people who take social welfare helps, some of them at least, they are often drug addicts or other substance abusers. And when the government gives some dole to them, instead of using that for food, they'll starve, but they will stone themselves. So when the mind gets captivated, it just neglects everything else. That's why the word here is ghoram. In the mind, it's vaikarika. Once the mind has got a conception that this is what is enjoyable, then as it will expand in that direction. So, once the mind thinks that, okay, no, taking drugs is enjoyable. And even if suffering comes in that process, no. Still, the pleasure is worth it. Think like that and just keep pursuing it again and again and again. And then it can go to such an extent that this actually, it's the suffering that comes is unbearable. But the person doesn't realize it. Because the mind has got its own momentum. Once the mind has got its momentum, then it is very, very difficult to stop it. So, the standard example that we use for the mind and the intelligence, for the way the inner world works, is the chariot body metaphor. Now, the chariot, there is horses and there is the charioteer. So the charioteer is the intelligence and the horses are the mind, are the senses. So if we could simplify that to understand this principle, we can say that instead of a chariot, there's a person riding on a horse. So there's a horse. Manorathena sati dhavato bhai. Manoratha. That metaphor is also used in the Bhagavatam. People run here and there on the ratha of the mind. So in the Upanishads talk about the whole body as a chariot. But here, the Bhagavatam talks about the mind itself like a chariot. So either way, basically it's a carrier for us. So there is the intelligence. And so there is a, so the charioteer is there, the horse is there, and the chariot is there. So basically, the horse is like the mind and the person is driving it. Now when the horse starts running in a particular direction, the horse is meant to go this way. It is, as soon as the horse sees, oh, there's a fruit over there. Now it wants to eat that fruit. Now initially when the horse head moves that direction, starts going in that direction, it's easy to control it. But once the horse starts running, the more momentum it gains, the more difficult it becomes to control it. So the faster the horse starts running, the greater will be the effort required to control it. Similarly, once the desire comes in the mind, at that time, it's possible to control it. But as the desire keeps growing, then it becomes almost unbearable. It becomes almost irresistible. So the soul is forced to act as it chooses to desire. So we do have free will. By our free will we desire. But once the desire starts growing, then the desire overpowers us. It propels us. So actually there is, for dealing with the mind, the first thing is to recognize the danger. We can hardly ever fight a battle if we don't even know that the battle is going on. So for us, often we don't even realize that there is a battle going on inside us. The mind is constantly trying to take over our consciousness. And once the mind takes over our consciousness, it can make us do insane things. All of us have experienced at times, we do something and then we ask, why did I do that? What made me do that? So actually that is our mind which impelled us to do certain things. Now, I'll talk about three aspects for controlling the mind. There is intelligence, diligence and dependence. So intelligence is evam buddhe param buddhva samsthabhyatmanam atmana. Intelligence is what we need for understanding, at the very least, that I need to control the mind. So without the intelligence, we just go along with the mind. And many people don't even recognize that they have uncontrolled minds. Why? Because they are simply going along with the mind. Now, if I have no plan where I want to go, wherever the horse is going, if I just go along with that, then I won't even recognize the horse is wild or uncontrolled, because I'm simply going with the horse. It's only when I want to go somewhere and the horse doesn't let me go there, then I realize, hey, this horse is very wild, it's uncontrolled. So it's only when we plan to do something and then we try determinedly to do it, and then when we can't do it, then we understand there's something wrong inside. What's going on? So, the first is, with intelligence, we recognize that there is this force inside me which is actually working against me. And this intelligence is nourished by scriptural study. So the buddhi, the intelligence, sometimes we say the intelligence is lost. Buddhi nashat pranashyati. So now intelligence, in a sense, is never lost or destroyed. Intelligence is simply captured by the mind. And once the intelligence is captured by the mind uses the intelligence in its service. So Prabhupada says in one letter that, now we are meant to use our intelligence to control our enjoying mentality, but instead we are habituated to enjoying intelligently. Enjoying intelligently means we use our intelligence to actually find out new ways to enjoy. Or we try to use our intelligence to find out ways in which we can enjoy, and we think we will not get caught by it. So, most of science and technology is actually requires a lot of intelligence to develop it. A lot of thought, intelligence, research and experimentation goes into it. So, intelligence is definitely there. But, what is the purpose of the intelligence? Unfortunately, most of the technology, it is. If you consider technology, how has it been developed? If we look at the history, technology is, most of the funds for developing technology that comes from defense, or it comes from the consumer industry. So defense is basically defending. Consumer industry is eating, sleeping, mating. We just want to enjoy better. So it's the enjoying mentality. Science may be a search for knowledge, but technology is mostly a search for enjoyment. A search for providing better ways of enjoying. Now, that is not the only thing there is. Technology can be used for constructive purposes also. But that is the primary purpose driving technology. You know, the whole, if you look at the recent history, the way, say, video streaming has developed. The primary reason video streaming developed was because people wanted to see videos with obscene content. And that was what fueled the development of the high resolution streaming video streaming industry. So basically, the technological development is simply the mind using the intelligence to fulfill its desires. So now if the intelligence is controlled, it can be used. The intelligence comes in control and controls the mind. The technology can be used for positive purposes, no doubt. Right now we are using the mic, we use internet, we fly by planes. So when we are trying to serve Krishna, we use the technology for constructive purposes. But the point is that when the mind takes control, it is not that it destroys the intelligence. Yes, it destroys the intelligence in the sense that we don't make intelligent decisions. But after that, it uses the intelligence for its own purposes. It's like, say, a war is going on between two people. And there's a formidable general on side B who is defending against the attack of side A. Now, side A attacks and defeats B. And then wounds but doesn't kill B. Wounds B and then gives some injection to B, by which what happens? B starts fighting for A. B defects over and starts fighting for A. So like that, for us, A is like the mind, B is like the intelligence. The battle going on between the mind and intelligence within us. But when the mind wins, then the intelligence is destroyed. But afterward, it's destroyed in the sense that we don't stop acting intelligently. But after that, the mind injects the intelligence with its enjoying mentality. And then afterwards, the intelligence starts working for the mind. And when that happens, then it becomes very difficult for that person to be saved. So, much of modern society, we see that there's a lot of modern or postmodern society, there's a lot of rationalization for sensual enjoyment. So, I was doing some research on abortion. You know, how it is wrong. So, how to scientifically, logically explain it as wrong. So, I read some opposite arguments. So, one of the arguments is, which the pro-abortion campaigners, they say that, actually, pregnancy is the slavery that nature has imposed on women. And abortion is freedom from the slavery that nature has imposed. Now, whoever wrote that book, if her mother had thought like that, she would not have been born, isn't it? So, it's terribly misled. Here, now they're writing whole books, giving out reasoning like this. So, in the writing of the book, there is definitely intelligence. But unfortunately, it's intelligence which is so captivated by the enjoying mentality that one just doesn't see any alternative facts at all. So similarly, the whole language is changed. So for example, if there are obscene images. No, obscenity can be called out as obscenity, vulgarity. But nowadays in movies, whenever that is there, it's called, the movie is filled with bold scenes. Now bold, what is boldness? It's not boldness, it's shamelessness. But when language is changed like this, what happens is, basically, the intelligence is used to further the enjoying mentality. Oh, there are a lot of bold scenes in this movie. Now, everybody wants to be bold. I also can be bold in this way. So then, when the intelligence is used to further the desires of the mind, then people get trapped. People get terribly trapped. And so, Srila Prabhupada in section 3.36 to 43, where Krishna talks about lust, there he says that actually a civilization that is based on furthering the enjoying mentality, that simply increases the material bondage of the soul. It simply prolongs the material existence of the soul. So when the intelligence is captivated by the mind, at that time people start rationalizing. Now to rationalize is, now rationalize, the spelling is R-A-T-I-O-N-A-L-L-I-E-S. Rationalize. When people rationalize, they tell rational lies. So whatever they're saying sounds rational, but it's actually a lie. It's actually a lie. So they tell like that. And you know, it's one thing to fool others, but it's quite another thing to fool ourselves. If we are fooling others, well, it's okay, we are being cunning, we are deceiving. But at least we know I'm fooling others. But sometimes the mind can speak such lies that we start believing our lies. And when we start believing it, it becomes very difficult for anyone to help. When the Mahabharata, Duryodhana says, when everybody is trying to tell Duryodhana to stop antagonizing the Pandavas, to accept a peace proposal with them. So Duryodhana says, why are all of you blaming me? He says, even after great introspection, I can't see a single fault in anything that I have done. A single fault I can't see. And then he says, you know, whatever I have done simply by the nature that I have got. And this nature I have got from the Creator. So if anyone is to be blamed for my actions, it is the Creator who is to be blamed. So this is rationalization. Okay, we have got a particular nature and we are going to act according to our nature. Now yes, we have a nature, but a part of the human nature or the part of the human endowment is also our intelligence. And we are meant to use our intelligence to understand which aspect of our nature is to be regulated, which aspect of our nature is to be rejected, and which aspect of our nature is to be reinforced. There are some aspects of our nature. Yes, if somebody is intellectual, somebody is a singer, somebody has some skills, that aspect of nature is to be reinforced. Some aspect of our nature has to be rejected. No, this is not the way I'm going to act. Some aspect, it's okay, but it needs to be done under regulation. So, we all, when the mind takes over the intelligence, then practically no one can save that person. Unless the person just gets such a terrible suffering, there is a, what happened? What am I doing? Why did I do this? This is what Vidura does to Dhritarashtra. In the first canto, when Vidura comes and he starts speaking strongly to Dhritarashtra, so Dhritarashtra is forced to confront him. Is this the reality what I have done? He says, what are you doing with your life? The only thing you are producing is cuff. You're doing nothing except just cuffing. You're living. Now the way he speaks is, that the food that Bhima has thrown away, you are eating that food. You are living like a dog at his place. Now, Yudhishthira was actually treating Dhritarashtra quite respectfully. So it is not that literally he was eating the food which Bhima had given away. Bhima Aparijitam Pindam. But the point which Vidura is saying over there is that actually this is the way you are living. You are living on the Pandavas whom you tried to kill. So he basically jolts him out. So when the mind, it rationalizes, then it needs someone who is very, very strong, who can actually break through that rationalization. So for Vidura, for Dhritarashtra, it was Vidura. So now, the acharyas describe that Vidura, if we see Vidura and Mahabharata and Valmiki in the, not Valmiki, Vibhishan and the Ramayana are similar. They are in the opposite camps. But Vibhishan goes over to Ravana, Ram's camp and fights against Ravana. But Vidura doesn't fight against the Kauravas. Why? Because Vidura, in the Ramayana, Vibhishana's brother, Ravana is the main villain and he's irredeemable. In the Mahabharata, it is Duryodhana who is the main villain. And Vidura Dhritarashtra is redeemable. So therefore, because Dhritarashtra was very attached to his sons, if Vidura had been a part of those who had killed his son, then he would just not have been able to hear anything from them. But because Vidura had not been a part of it directly, when Vidura came back, Dhritarashtra still remembered that actually he's my well-wisher. And thus, he was able to hear from him. So for us, the first step in dealing with the mind is the intelligence. And intelligence is not just our analysis. Often we need to get intelligence from others, especially from someone whom we trust. See, most people, we look at them through our mind. But we need to someone in our life with whom we look at our mind. And most people, if somebody speaks sweetly to us, start thinking, you know, what does this person want? Why is he speaking so sweetly? He must be needing something from me. If somebody speaks harshly to us, we start thinking, you know, this person is envious of me. So, we filter everything that people say through the mind. But if we have someone whom we trust, our spiritual masters, our spiritual guides, then they help us to see the mind. That's how we get the intelligence. So the second is diligence. Krishna says that, Abhyasena tu kaunteya vairagena chigruhyate. So, abhyasa is diligence. It's not that when we decide, okay, I'm not going to do this or I'm going to do this. It's not that the mind is going to be controlled in one day. It's a gradual process. It's an incremental process. So, just take small steps in controlling the mind. And the mind goes off track, we bring it back again track. It goes off track, we bring back it on track. And usually self-improvement, whichever it is, it happens through small steps. It happens to small steps. You just take gradual steps. So that diligence is required. So every day when you're practicing bhakti, chanting the holy names, hearing about Krishna, worshipping the deities, then this is diligence. If you keep doing that, gradually the mind is getting controlled. So the connection with Krishna, the diligence in Krishna bhakti is like a daily medicinal dose that we're taking. Now every day, say, if somebody has got iron deficiency, if every day they take iron pill and look, has my iron level increased? It is not a daily correspondence. But if you keep taking the iron pills, gradually the iron level will increase. So like that, diligently if you keep practicing bhakti, gradually Krishna, the intelligence becomes stronger, our connection with Krishna becomes stronger, and the capacity to control the mind increases. And the last aspect is dependence. Dependence means we can't control the mind ourselves. We have to depend on Krishna. And dependence on Krishna means that actually there is a particular point in our life when somehow the mind gets it. See, conviction is when the intelligence gets it. And realization is when the mind gets it. Conviction means, you know, I'm convinced this is what I should be doing. But even if I decide this is what I want to do, still, my mind will keep proposing alternatives. You know, I make one sankalpa, I'm going to do this. But the mind keeps, why not try this? Why not try that? Why not try that? Mind will keep giving vikalpa. So, the conviction is what we do need and we need to get it. So, by hearing scripture, by associating with devotees from whom we can get proper understanding, our intelligence becomes convinced. And with the intelligence being convinced, there will be diligence. We will persevere. But, at one particular point, the mind will get it. When the mind gets it, then the mind will stop proposing the undesirable. For all of us, this has happened in some of the fields. Now, maybe some of us might have been eating meat before. But now, if somebody is eating meat, we don't feel attracted. The mind is not even proposing it. That change of the mind, where the mind stops thinking of enjoying things, that is going to happen by Krishna's mercy. That is where we are dependent on Krishna. At mai asakta manaha. Or for our mind to become attached to Krishna, it's going to take time. But Krishna will do it in his due course. But till that time, till it happens, we just using our intelligence and with the diligence, we keep practicing bhakti consistently. The very fact that we have the opportunity to practice bhakti, the very fact that we have the opportunity to hear scriptures and nourish our intelligence, that itself is good enough. Just because the desire has come, that doesn't mean that we have to act on those desires. So the mind will keep proposing, but if our intelligence is strong, we will not accept the mind's proposals. And as we keep saying no to the mind's proposals, then gradually Krishna sees our sincerity. And Krishna gives us the realization. When he gives it, when the mind gets it, when we get the realization, then the mind will stop proposing. And at that time, prashanta manasam hiyenam yoginam sukham uttamam upaiti shantrajasam brahma bhutam akalmasham. Krishna says, prashanta manasam hiyenam. The mind becomes deeply, profoundly peaceful. Yoginam sukham uttamam. The yogi experiences the supreme peace. Upaiti shanta rajasam. Cause the rajas, which is agitating the mind, that itself has become pacified. Brahma bhutam akalmasham. We realize our spiritual nature. Akalmasham. The impurities go away. This is 6.27. Krishna says later in 18.54 that Brahma bhuta prasannatma. When we realize ourselves as a spiritual being, as parts of Krishna, then we become joyful. So this joyfulness will come gradually as long as we keep trying to fix our mind on Krishna with whatever intelligence we have and whatever diligence we can summon at our present situation. And by that, by doing all, with intelligence and diligence, we persevere in focusing the mind while we are dependent on Krishna for changing the mind. See, there is controlling the mind and there is changing the mind. So controlling the mind is what we can do to some extent. But changing the mind is what Krishna will do as per his plan. So we keep controlling the mind to whatever capacity we can. And in Krishna's time, he will change the mind. And once the mind is changed, once the mind is attached to Krishna, then our life becomes susukham kartam avyayam. Our life becomes joyful. So I'll summarize. I spoke today about how the inner world, the mind and intelligence, how they work. The mind is in the mode of goodness in the sense that it maintains whatever it is doing. So, the example of two experiments, even when the mice were getting shock at a particular place where they had earlier got food, they keep going there, because it's a habit. Or when the mind, when the dogs were given some food, the ringing of a bell, even if the food stopped, still they kept ringing, they kept salivating. So for us, there is sense perception, there is sense pleasure, and there is sense desire. So the sense perception causes sense desire because there is a hope of sense pleasure. But after some time, the sense pleasure goes away, but still sense perception causes sense desire. Because there is a Pavlovian response. We have associated that. So we have to change that association of sense perception with sense pleasure. And for that, inner change to happen, to understand that the mind, when it becomes uncontrolled, it has its own momentum which doesn't stop. It's like a car moving fast, doesn't stop. When the mind is uncontrolled, it becomes the enemy not only of the soul, but also of the body. So people captivated by, say, watching movies or watching YouTube videos, they just forget to even eat at that time. Eat or drink. People who may take money, they are addicted to drugs, they take drugs, but they don't take food. So the mind becomes the enemy of the soul as well as the body. And the intelligence is meant to control the mind, but the mind overcomes the intelligence and then it makes the intelligence defect. So when the intelligence is defeated, then the mind uses the intelligence for its own purposes. That's why we see a lot of technology being used to create more and more options for the mind to enjoy, for us to, and then instead of looking for spiritual pleasure, the mind keeps going on with this option, that option, that option, vikalpakaha. And that way, when intelligence can be used to increase the options available to the mind, that's one way the mind misuses the intelligence. The other is technology, the mind can use the intelligence to rationalize the enjoyment. So we justify what we are doing. So to think that abortion is liberation from biological slavery, or for Duryodhana to say that whatever I am doing, it's simply by nature, so my creator is responsible. I am not. This is where the, when we rationalize, we speak rational lies. And it's very difficult to save a person whose intelligence has been conquered by the mind. It's only if somebody who is very forceful, whom the mind is a little open to, then the person can have some hope to understand. Such was Vidura for Dhritarashtra. So for controlling the mind, we discussed three steps: intelligence, diligence and dependence. So intelligence has to be strengthened, by which we know there is an inner war going on and I need to fight against the mind. The intelligence is strengthened by scriptural study and is strengthened by hearing specifically from those whom we don't see through the filter of our mind, somebody whom we trust. They can help us to see how the mind is acting in our life and how it is tricking us. And diligence means that even if we don't succeed in controlling the mind, we just do whatever we can, small steps. Now, horse, if it is running wild, the earlier we control it, the better it is. So diligence, the mind goes off, bring it back. And dependence is that with by Krishna's grace, we're dependent for him that he will convert the mind. So with intelligence and diligence, even the mind proposes wrong things, we reject those proposals and keep persevering. But when the mind becomes purified by Krishna's grace, then the mind stops proposing the wrong thing itself. And then our bhakti becomes joyful. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Yes, Vadra.
Intelligence is also our senses, mind, intelligence, ego, all are covered with desires, material desires.
Okay, yeah.
So we try to control the mind with the intelligence, but that is also covered.
I got the question, yeah.
Now, we know that we depend on Krishna ultimately. We have to come to understanding we are not this body, because ultimately it's coming down to considering I am this body, and that's why I'm going on with this way. Now, devotees, I'm giving general example, devotee ultimately depending on Krishna. He's praying so hard, he's doing everything he has to do to control those desires, but still devotee sometimes acts on it. So then devotee can lose the faith because thinks that this process is not working for me.
Yeah.
So can you
So now we are meant to control the mind with the intelligence, but even the intelligence is covered with worldly desires. And because of that, although sometimes we may try, but we may do some wrong things. So what do we do at that time? Yes, Krishna does say that Indriyani Mano Buddhir Asya Adhishthana Mucchati. When he talks about where all lust is situated, in 3.40 he says that it is situated in the senses, mind and intelligence. At the same time, Krishna also says at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, now you, with your intelligence, contemplate this and decide what you want to do. So deliberate with your intelligence and then do as you desire. So what this means is that our intelligence, lust is situated in the intelligence. But that doesn't necessarily mean that lust or any worldly desire has constantly or totally taken over the intelligence. So it's basically like there is a greed or lust or whatever pride there in the intelligence, but there is the other part also in the intelligence. So the intelligence is like in a conflict zone. It's in a border zone. It's partly controlled by Maya, but partly it is also with Krishna. It's also, we have a conscience. We do use our intelligence to choose wisely sometimes, sometimes unwisely. So basically, this, the more we nourish our intelligence, the more we'll be able to act wisely. So if we regularly hear scriptures, regularly study, then the intelligence is strong. Otherwise, If we indiscriminately contemplate sense objects, then the intelligence becomes weakened, and then the intelligence starts getting rationalized. The mind, it starts getting used to rationalize whatever the mind is planning. So that's with respect to, it's not the intelligence entirely this way or it's entirely that way. It's in between. Both ways it can be used. Now, with respect to our slipping or falling, yes, that's just a part of life. It's very, very rare souls who will just march towards Krishna. All of us will have our slips and falls. So the two different things. See, one is a victim and the other is a perpetrator or a wrongdoer. So when we are wounded, say because the mind misled us and made us do some wrong thing, you know, then at that time we need to treat ourselves. So it's like there are two broad approaches to look at our conditionings. One is to treat them as a disease. So say lust, anger, greed, envy, pride, these are diseases. And a disease requires treatment. But you know, this itself, it can go beyond a particular limit. So if there's anger and somebody goes and somebody shouts, okay, that's bad. But if somebody doesn't physically assaults, then what happens? Then that may go into the hands of the law and people may have to punish. The person may have to go to jail. So it depends on the extent. So at one level, as long as it is within reasonable limits, now we want to follow high standards of purity, from there there are some lapses. But there are certain socially defined limits. If it's within that, then it's not such a serious issue. If we just intensify the practices of bhakti, we may do some personal atonement and then we will become purified by that. We don't have to become very disheartened. That's just the process by which we gradually grow. We fall, we rise, we fall, we rise, and gradually we learn. So if you are practicing bhakti diligently in the inner war between the mind and the intelligence, sometimes the mind may overcome the intelligence. But if you are regularly practicing bhakti, my intelligence is getting stronger and stronger. And eventually, it will win over the mind. But if the mind, if there is somebody does something which is very seriously wrong, you know, where somebody breaks laws, somebody hurts others, not just emotionally, but physically assaults others, then there, it's like a person is not just a victim, a person is not a victim of their conditionings. Because of their conditioning, they are becoming a wrongdoer. And then there needs to be punished. So, I mean, punishment means that much stronger action is required over there. So, for most of us, it's not that we just rationalize or think that's nothing wrong when I fell down. But it's just that that's the normal way in which we grow. So, instead of becoming discouraged when we fall, we can actually become more determined to connect with Krishna. Yes, it is. Why did I fall? Why did I have this slip or fall? It's not because Krishna bhakti doesn't work. It's rather because I became disconnected from Krishna bhakti. So like say, on many roads, at the side of the road, there are bumps. So if a driver starts going off the road, then suddenly there's a bump. So somebody is driving on a road and they start sleeping off or something. And then the car starts going off the road. Oh, bump. They wake up and they pull the car back on the road. So like that, when we start, we are going on the path of Krishna bhakti. But when we doze off, then we go off track. And you all go off track, there are bumps. And the bumps wake us up. And we're meant to pull ourselves back. So when the desires start agitating within us, that rather than thinking that this is the failure of the process of Krishna bhakti, we can see that there is a failure of our absorption in Krishna. The desire is coming up within us. And the desire is making us do some small wrong things. Then that's like the car has gone off track and there's a warning to me. Get the car back on track. So if we see, if we think that because the desires have come, I have to do the thing, then it's like we are going off the wrong track. But if we say desires have come because I have gone off track, there are two different things. One is because the desires have come, I will go off track now. No, not like that. The desires have come because I have already gone off track. I have become disconnected from Krishna. So let me reconnect with Krishna. If we do that, then we will find that we will be able to overcome whatever wrongs are there, and that we'll actually be able to become more intense in our Krishna bhakti. Okay. Thank you. Oh, okay.
Prabhu, very nice class.
Thank you.
It's a little confusing how this verse starts, my dear Uddhava, a person bereft of intelligence first falsely identifies himself with the material body and mind. And when such false knowledge arises within one's consciousness, material passion, the cause of great suffering, pervades the mind, which by nature is situated in goodness. It seems like it's a little putting the cart before the horse, because it seems like, you know, the intelligence has already been overcome by the passion of the mind. So I don't know, it's maybe an unusual question, but it just struck me.
So the question is, that can the intelligence be overcome by the mind?
No, the question is, just, it seems here that it's put, so first the intelligence falsely identifies, and then the mind becomes pervaded or overcome with passion pervades the
okay,
mind.
Okay, I understood your question. Yeah.
So it seems like, well,
yeah, I got the question.
Doesn't
yeah.
the mind, I mean, when we're born, it's not like...
Okay, yeah, I got the question.
There's not a lot of goodness.
Yeah, so here it is said that, when the intelligence is lost, then we misidentify with the body, and then we get kind of captivated by the mind's lower desires, and then we fall. So actually, this is the mind and intelligence are constantly, they are in an interaction with each other. That interaction can be cooperative or that can be antagonistic. It depends. So there is a basic misidentification which is there, which indicates a lack of intelligence. That is, the soul identifies with the body. Now, that is itself at one level illusion. But that does not necessarily mean that because of that the soul is going to fall into sinful activities immediately. There can be people who identify with their body, but overall still they live in the mode of goodness. It's not that everybody who is in the bodily conception is necessarily living sinful. Majority may be. So in a sense, the misidentification of the body is like a broad illusion which is there for everybody in material existence. And in that sense, that itself indicates a lack of intelligence. So we can say that the intelligence is also lost at various levels. Say somebody is trying to recover from alcoholism. They take the first drink. Well, that is itself a loss of intelligence. You should not have drunk at all. But they drink twice, thrice, 10 times. And at least after one drink they could have stopped, but they drink 10 times. That's further loss of intelligence. Then if they drink, now I can drive home. They are driving under the influence of alcohol. That is even greater loss of intelligence. So like that, the intelligence is also lost in installments. So at one level, the loss of intelligence in terms of bodily misidentification, that is there for everyone. But further, by contemplation of the sense objects, we can lose our intelligence further. So even when all of us, intellectually we understand I'm not the body and the soul, but still many times we act on the bodily platform. But the bodily platform itself doesn't have to necessarily be a sensual platform or a sinful platform. At the bodily level, people can act in different ways. So the intelligence is lost in various installments. And the more the contemplation of the sense objects, the more the intelligence gets eroded. So this is talking about that progression from the basic bodily misidentification to captivation by sense objects. And then to degradation to terrible suffering. So that's a sequence that is being talked about over there. So I think we'll stop here. So if there's any question, we'll talk personally afterwards. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki, Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Jai Gaur Premanand.